Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your title.
Sure, John Hartner. I'm the book writer of Once Upon a One More Time.
And yeah, as you mentioned, Once Upon One More Time, a new musical that is playing at Shakespeare Theater Company in D.C. Now through January 9th. I got to say, man, the town is buzzing. Numerous people have messaged me saying, have you heard about this? I said, in fact, we have an interview booked tomorrow. why don't you just break down the basic premise, if you will. We got a little fairy tale magic and some songs of a certain pop star. Explain sort of the premise.
Sure. The premise is that it's set in the world of fairy tales and the iconic characters that we know and love, Cinderella, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, and a couple other princesses have this book club, but the only book that exists in the kingdom is the Book of Fairy Tales. So they just read those stories week after week. And Cinderella decides that she wants something more out of her story. She feels like something's missing, but she can't quite put her finger on it. And so she asks the universe and sort of her fairy godmother for something more. And she's given a book, and the book is The Feminine Mystique. And it's sort of her introduction to what is possible for her as a woman and as a character. And once she reads that, her mind is blown and chaos and hilarity ensues.
Great. And of course, how does the actual music work in here? Because you're kind of juxtaposing these classic fairy tales, sort of a much different time period centuries ago, with some of the biggest, you know, pop hits that of this generation.
Sure. The premise too is that the stories are being read to children. And so every time a story is requested, our characters assemble and perform those scenes for them. So it's essentially set in the modern world, but their world is quite a bit behind ours. So gotcha. The pop songs fit in. They actually slot in kind of amazingly well in that Britney already had a song called Cinderella. We had, you know, obviously an iconic song called Work Bitch that works very well for her with her stepsisters and stepmother. And then there's just some deeper cuts from the albums that not everybody will know, but that really work well within the story to kind of drive the narrative forward.
Great. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a couple of them. Could you rattle off a couple of the other songs? Because a lot of us grew up with those songs.
Could, oh, sure.
Remind
yeah.
us some of the, and explain not only just, you know, listing them, but, you know, maybe like break down how it sort of maybe applies in the story.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are plot spoilers, but...
Well, if you can dance around that.
I will dance as best I can. I'm not a trained dancer, but...
It's totally okay.
we open with One More Time, and yeah, it's the characters in the kingdom presenting themselves to the girl trying to be chosen. So you tweak the lyrics a bit, so it's instead of hit me, baby, one more time, it's pick me. Once, you know, pick my once upon a time. So they're all competing to get the girl to choose their story. And other songs, I mentioned Work Bitch, obviously that's when they're doing the scene where her, you know, where she's being ordered around to clean and cook and whatever, that's where that song is used. Other Oops, I Did It Again would be a plot spoiler. Circus is Prince Charming's entrance into the palace scene. So he has this really amazing sort of out of this world entrance that Keone and Mari Madrid have choreographed that is really mind blowing. And so that's used there for his entrance. And gosh, I'm thinking of the other.
How about Lucky?
Lucky is great. Actually, Lucky is almost the cornerstone of peace in that it's, we go into the princess's sort of own private space as they think about, once Cinderella's introduced the idea that she's not sure this is happy ever after. And when she questions that, they all begin in the moment to question whether what they'd want from their own stories if they had some autonomy or had a say in their story. So Lucky is basically the summary of the piece, which is I'm so lucky, but why am I unhappy when I seem to have everything, when I have an ever after, and I seem to be living the dream.
Yeah, great. Who knew that was going to be the cornerstone? Thanks for explaining that. How about sure. Stronger? That was a famous one. I'm sure that makes its way in here.
Stronger, yes. That's our that's almost our finale when the princesses are confronting kind of the powers that be, and they work together to change the narrative.
And then maybe time for one more. How about Toxic?
Toxic, yes. Toxic has actually undergone a bunch of iterations, but right now it is the stepmother is looking for a way, you know, who's always scheming to try to find a way to get her daughters to replace Cinderella. She convinces the narrator that he has the power to banish characters. And so Toxic is her getting in his ear and telling him that since he has this power, he should use it. And she walks him through through banishing each of the princesses and sending them off to a place called Story's End.
Fantastic. I'm trying to think, are we leaving now? I mean, there's a ton of other ones. I'm sure Sometimes and, you know,
Sometimes is at the, yep. Sometimes is at the ball where Cinderella is trying to figure out whether she wants to continue the narrative as it is. And she's questioning the choice of staying with Prince Charming. And Every Time is her ballad in the second act where she just feels like she's ruined everything and that nothing is working out and maybe she bit off more than she can chew. And it's a really beautiful moment for our Cinderella, Brie Gahelin, who has just the most beautiful voice and just sits there and sort of sings to the universe about what went wrong.
How about You Drive Me Crazy?
Crazy is the, you are good.
They're all, you know, one leads to another. They all sort of...
No, it's true. And it's an embarrassment of riches. There are so many great songs. You know, we even in the mega mix, we have Till the World Ends because we couldn't find a place for it in the show. But it is my favorite Britney song. So it's like we're not leaving the theater without using it somewhere.
Right.
And Crazy is the top of the second act where when the whole kingdom has been turned upside down and the women go on strike, it's everybody going, well, now this is crazy. What do we do? Our entire sort of way of life has been upended by this new development.
For sure. For sure. Well, so that actually sparks an interesting question is, do you have to, you know, I mean, there's been so much talk, you know, in the news about, you know, the whole conservatorship battle and the rights to all this stuff. Did you have to get the rights to be able to use these songs?
You do have to get the rights, and it's getting the rights is a bit above my pay grade, but there are all of the songwriters, I think, are involved in that. And with any modern pop song, usually you have a whole slew of people who write it. So there's probably, if I had to guess, 85 writers. And in terms of the sign-off process, I don't know if it's literally going to each of them or not. But
you don't have to get into the nuts and bolts of, you know, who's getting paid what. But I mean, I'm more interested from you as a, you know, a playwright perspective. You know, so you sit and you write, obviously you sit down and you write the book of this stuff, which is, you know, obviously all the fairy tale princesses, that's all public domain because that's old, you know, Brothers Grimm or whatever. But then in terms, I mean, I assume you wrote the music and the lyrics too, right? Or is it all existing lyrics, I guess.
Yeah, the music is the existing music. The lyrics, I will rewrite them when they're necessary to make sense for our story. Sometimes that's just changing a pronoun, and sometimes it's changing an entire line. But we try to keep as close as we can to the original because everybody knows them so well. But yeah, we do have license to change where we need to so that the story makes sense.
Very cool. So then, yeah, and I don't want to get too bogged down in it, but then I guess I know with movies and plays and everything, there's almost like two levels, right? There's like the song, the songwriting rights, which is, you know, you can have your own people, the actors and actresses singing it. So I guess you're only paying for just the song, right? The lyrics part. But then if you actually played the song itself in it, you know, in its original form, that's a whole nother, that's like a recording rights deal. We're getting too bogged down. I guess we don't need to go into all that. But
yeah, I was like, oh no, we're in territory I don't know.
Right. Well, I was just curious from your perspective, you know, sitting down and because I love these sort of fractured fairy tale stuff, you know. I mean, I guess Shrek sort of blew the door open on all that with these modern tunes set against these old fairy tales. But why do you think audiences love sort of, I mean, we're sort of in that postmodern, you know, everything where everything's meta. I mean, this is perfect for that, right?
Yeah, I do. I think everything's being reexamined right now. So it feels quite timely, but those stories are classics. And I used to teach elementary school and, you know, reading them to the kids, they're, we say it in the show, the stories can be deeply problematic. And so to reexamine them through a modern lens is interesting with a, you know, with an eye towards fun. This is not like a doctoral thesis, right? It's we're here to have a good time, but it is interesting to look at them in a modern light and how, you know, what are we taking from them and what are we teaching our children if we read them in their original form without any commentary. So this, the show itself is really a kind of a meta commentary on that.
Great. Now, have you gotten any feedback from the Princess of Pop herself? And, you know, like, good job, thanks for using my stuff.
We did get that. We've done a bunch of readings of this to kind of find the story, and she came to a reading. I don't know which reading it was, but yeah, I sat behind her. She clapped and laughed and smiled and yeah, it was very complimentary afterwards. So that was, you know, a thrill for all of us.
That's great. When did the show actually launch? How far into it are we?
Launched on November 30th. So I think tonight is our 10th preview. And then we open officially on the 17th, December 17th.
Gotcha. Well, I guess my question is this the Shakespeare Theater Company? Is this the world premiere? Is this the first time anyone's seen it? Is this it?
World premiere.
Oh, wow. I wasn't sure if this was like, you know, part of like a tour or something you were doing. No, that makes this even more exciting. All right. Buried the lead, Jason. I'm going to bump that up towards the top. Okay. Well, then go into that a little bit then before we run, you know, talk about how you were, I don't know, did they commission you to do it? Did you already write it? And then you were trying to figure out what theater would be the best, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was written and we were originally going to Chicago, and then the pandemic upended everything. And I think the producers had always wanted to come to DC if they could. It's all about getting schedules to align and our season's already set, but the pandemic changed everything. And so there then wasn't opening, I think, in Shakespeare Theater Company's season. And the producers jumped at that because it's just a kind of fantastic marriage of, you don't immediately think, oh, Shakespeare and Britney, let's put those together. But, you know, Shakespeare's mission is to re-examine classics, and these stories are classics, obviously. And if I may, I mean, so are Britney's songs. So it does feel like maybe it was meant to be. And it's an amazing theater. And everybody's been so welcoming and supportive. And I've sort of just had the time of my life.
Yeah. Speaking of the theater itself, like, we've gone a lot into the story and the music, but I mean, when we go in there, I mean, what are audiences going to see visually on stage? You know, a lot of the once upon a time magic kind of thing, you know, describe sort of, you know, like the set, the backdrops, the costumes, the visual end of it.
Yeah. The set is really magical and almost operatic. And the idea was that what you're looking at is a dream factory where these stories are constructed kind of on a nightly basis. So it's just striking is the word I'd use to describe the set. The costumes are incredible and they're a modern take on it. And in terms of, yeah, it's not like anything I've ever seen before. So I think audiences, you sit there and I'm in the audience every night and I can hear people commenting going, oh, this is what's going to happen. This is so different. This is so interesting. And the crowd itself is, you know, it's a mix of subscribers and Britney fans and groups of gay men and mothers and daughters. And it's a real kind of almost bus stop of people that have come together to experience it. And it's just a lot of fun.
Great. And what are some of the audience? I mean, what is the reaction so far? I mean, I guess you opened just after Thanksgiving. So people, it's the holiday season. People are heading out to see shows. And what are the reaction? Are people, I guess it's probably of all ages. Well, probably mostly, you know, more, you know, millennials my age that remember it. But I mean, I'm sure. I mean, this music is beloved by everybody, though, right? So what are people saying to you on the way out? They're like, oh, my God, I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all variations on that. But the songs are so iconic that I overheard a couple of subscribers the other night who were probably women in their 70s who were singing, you know, One More Time. And she said, oh, that's the only song I thought I knew. But then I remembered that I knew Oops too. And I thought, oh my gosh, you're my mother's age. And they're singing them. They know all the words. So I just think those songs are everywhere. And they're such a part of kind of the cultural landscape that people, I think of all ages, would be surprised at how many of them they actually do know.
Great. Well, it sounds like just an absolute blast for fans of the music or really anyone. I mean, just seeing these fairy tales recontextualized like this. So, you know, props to you. That's really, really cool that you came up with this. I guess before we run, you know, we've talked a lot about the show, but tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, where did you grow up and how did you get into theater?
Sure. I grew up outside of Boston and I went to USC and I wrote a musical there with a friend. And from there, I started writing, I write a lot of movies. I mostly work in that world, but a lot of them have some music element to them. So this has represented a chance to get back into theater for me, which I've loved, because unlike in film where you really are working on your own most of the time and you turn in the script and you may never be heard from again. In theater, you're all building it together in the room. And that's just more exciting to me. And, you know, this kind of collaboration with really top-notch team members. So I've loved that. My partner's an actor. He's in a show in New York right now called the Lehman Trilogy. And so we don't really know where home is anymore because we've been on the road for a few years, but having a stop in DC where I lived after college briefly, I did AmeriCorps. It's kind of been a really exciting homecoming. And I think if you told 22-year-old me that the next time I'd be back, it would be with a Britney Spears musical, he'd be pretty excited.
Yeah, you mentioned, just so our listeners know, you mentioned that, you know, you've done a lot of, you know, work in film. Tell them about The Upside. That might be, you know, in terms of star power. Remind them who all was in that. That's a big coup for you as a screenwriter.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. It's a remake of an amazing French movie called Les Intouchables, and it's based on a true story of a man who gets in an accident, becomes a quadriplegic, and hires a carer. It's kind of outside somebody who's never been a carer before. And so in the American remake, it's Bryan Cranston plays the quadriplegic and Kevin Hart is his carer and Nicole Kidman is Bryan's sort of secretary in charge d'affaires. And so, yeah, the casting was, you know, my jaw dropped every time somebody got added to it. And it's a really, really fun movie. And it's sort of same tonally with this show. I think it's something that everybody can enjoy. I always say if my dad enjoys it, then you're probably going to do okay. So my dad gave thumbs up to The Upside, and I think he'll like this too.
I love it. And then I'm a movie guy, so now I'm geeking out. You got The Boys in the Boat coming up. It got a tease ahead to that.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, you never know in the movie business, but but that's an incredible story of the 1936 Olympics and this ragtag bunch of rowers from the University of Washington who really were joining the team so that they could eat, because you got a stipend during the Depression if you made the varsity team. And it based on an incredible book. And I wrote at USC. And so that was something I really pushed to try to be able to write. So hopefully that'll come out at some point. I think the pandemic upended that as well for a bit. But that's an incredible, incredible story too.
Great. Well, we're going to keep an eye on that. It sounds like it could be, you know, some inspirational sports stuff, Chariots of Fire style. So we'll keep an eye on it. Well, John, it's been a blast chatting with you. I really appreciate it. Congrats on the success of this world premiere musical. Again, everybody, it's called Once Upon One More Time. It's going to be at Shakespeare Theater Company now through January 9th. So get your tickets now. Thanks, John.
Thank you so much.